and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we still have intriguing kerfuffles. You know, last week, as we know, we were going to host Bill Hedden and Terry Tempest Williams and on the wonderful victory and need for protection of bear's ears. And so we were all lined up for this week, and Terry Tempest Williams actually couldn't make it, and now we're having technical challenges at our end in connecting with wonderful Bill. So we set forth, it's all very witty, Mercury still retrograde, but let's dive in. So we say an appreciative farewell to Houston Smith, who died last week, one of the great contributors to global mythic religious understanding, an intrepid explorer, somebody who valued entheogens, again, as part of our Renaissance, that the plants really want to heal our hearts and kinship. Right now, it's as though a call goes forth, and it's as though the backstage gods are like, we're going to have to either kill the humans or heal them. Let's try healing them first. Let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship available for fresh animation. So off we go. We also salute the going backstage of wonderful, wonderful art critic John Berger, author of Ways of Seeing, and his invaluable contribution to all of us. Just a brief little mention of that. In his book, Ways of Seeing, there's a fantastic essay on the nude in art. And our guest is almost here. I will introduce him in moments, but let me finish this little paragraph. So in this great essay on the nude in art, Berger says, here's before industrialism, we have, you know, naked people cavorting. Look at those. How wonderful. And he said, once we get industrialism, for the first time ever, we have the nude in art. And it's almost always a woman, and she's looking directly out of the painting, watching the viewer watch her. And he says, this is a mean trick of, my words, the reality police of creative people, that whatever they're doing, they're watching themselves do it. So we all want to go to be naked rather than nude. And this is also just part of the longtime war on reverence, of which we are all the antidote. And so here we go, our wonderful heartening news. We are about to welcome Bill Hedden, executive director of the Grand Canyon Trust. And I like, you know, from the ladling out of the cauldron of despair and futility, coyote ladles out bear's ears, saying reverent indigenuity spiraling into the memosphere. He is executive director of the Grand Canyon Trust. The wildlands of our collective soul in Utah have assumed human form to come tell us its story in the form of Bill. So welcome, Bill.
Oh, thank you, Caroline. It's good to be here.
That's right. And we overcame the small kerfuffle of today. There we go. And we waved to Terry Tempest Williams. That's all very witty. So, yes. So, you know, many of our team, we can re-explain the beautiful, powerful, literal and symbolic significance of bear's ears and the mounting opposition to its protection. So wherever you want to dive in about protecting the sacred and bear's ears having been declared a monument by Obama, yes, we want to honor that. And then what is up against it? I've been clipping newspaper articles as well as your own splendid blog at Grand Canyon Trust.
Well, I should probably set the stage a little bit for people. We're so close to it that we forget. In southeastern Utah, from Canyonlands National Park stretching south to the San Juan River, is what is probably the most important unprotected archaeological district in the United States. There's about a 13,000-year record of human inhabitation of the place, and there are just hundreds of thousands of amazing archaeological sites. And it's also some of the glorious canyon country of the Southwest, with the alpine peaks of the Abajo Mountains sticking up through it. And for a very long time, people have been wishing to protect it since Bob Marshall proposed that in the 1930s. And over the last 5 years, there has been a concerted push by the tribes whose ancestral lands these are, the Hopi, Zuni, Navajo, and two branches of the Ute tribe, to protect this area either through legislation or through a presidential proclamation of a national monument. And right after Christmas, President Obama designated a 1.35 million acres of public land there as the Bears Ears National Monument, named after two prominent buttes that look like bears ears. And as a first, he declared that there would be really important tribal participation in planning and executing the management of the place. So it was a giant victory, and we can get into the politics of it, but it was something where the Utah politicians had drawn a fierce line in the sand that this could not happen, and now they are, vowing vengeance of many kinds.
Exactly. And again, even when I posted last week on the many Facebook pages I have, some people are like, oh, I mean, most people are like, yay, yay. And some people are like, oh, it's another federal land grab. And I go, no, that would be ill-informed. This is for all of us. Here's this wonderful thing. There we go. And so I honor you for always metabolizing your conniption fits and heading into steady storytelling, embracing narrative that's so strong. And this theme, I mean, you've lived in Utah so long. You've been such an effective protector and advocate. And I love, you know, what you and the team you've assembled. And I was so honored to be hosted at the gathering that you convened with so many great, deeply dedicated for decades beings, was so so powerful, and we talked about, you know, which we can bring up again, you know, the Bundys and the story again. Who's got the story stirring stick? And we're handing it to you and the land itself, because certainly, you know, I think you are an embodiment of partnering with what we love, right? Isn't that part of your deep soul?
Yes, I mean. These places affect me on a heart level, and then to be able to work with people who obviously got an unimaginably deeper connection than I do has been a great gift. And I think one part of getting this story straight is, you know, that these are all federal lands already. The president cannot designate a national monument on non-federal lands. So when people call this a federal land grab, they're either lying or they just have no idea what they're talking about. It's all federal land now. It's going to be managed more carefully. There's not going to be new oil and gas drilling and uranium mining and potash and tar sands development, but valid existing rights will be honored, as will all the current kinds of access from the tribes and from ranchers and other people to go out and you know, gather wood and herbs and conduct ceremonies and sacred sites. But in a sane world, the place will now have a lot more attention and dollars for managing to protect the archaeological sites, which have been getting looted at a great pace, and where each time that happens, basically a page is torn out of the history book and lost forever. And, you know, to have the Utah politicians, Orrin Hatch, said this is nothing less than the end of a way of life. Huh. And you say, well, Mr. Hatch, there were people who have lived there for 13,000 years who have now been brought back into the story, and you're saying that because these lands are going to get a little more protection, that we've ended a way of life. That seems like, you know, veering pretty far off course.
Yes, and it's also, again, as you had mentioned, it is a beautiful collaboration between the five tribes who have lived there for millennia with the federal government in a happy, may it be so, partnership, which includes also an educational center, right, dedicated to indigenous guiding wisdom and Western science.
Yes, the hope of the tribes here is that in having their traditional knowledge recognized as being a valuable guide to how to relate to these lands, that they want to have a center for explaining their way of approaching the land and comparing it side by side with Western science and Western land management practices, so that we can all learn a great deal from looking at these different ways of knowing the world side by side. And the Bear's Ears could be a way of mediating between these knowledge systems.
Right. And at our gathering, one of the great Native leaders who was with us was also speaking about, yeah, the frame, the structure through which people enter, you know, a sacred land, in which it's just, you know, here's the respect and this is how you enter, which is great. It reminded me of wonderful ally and friend of show, Faith Spotted Eagle at Standing Rock. And when she was welcoming the veterans and many outsiders who were coming, she was saying, and here's the structure that we're presenting, and here's a respectful and reverent way to participate. And she just set the guiding tone in such a wonderful way. And that's also part of the thought of Bear's Ears, that it would be, you know, a portal through which people entered and were provided a framework of respect and history and knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah. These are people who, not to, you know, at the risk of oversimplifying something that's very nuanced and complicated, people who saw our relationship with the world as being a reciprocal one.
Yes.
And that, you know, we need to ask what the world needs from us, not just what can we grab and appropriate for ourselves. And, you know, there is much to learn from that. One of the participants at our gathering was Vernon Masayesfa, who had been the Hopi tribal chairman. And before the gathering began, he sat with me and talked a little bit about the wild plan to build a tramway down into the Grand Canyon, right where the Little Colorado runs into the main Colorado, which is the sacred place of emergence into this world for the Hopi. And there's a dome there at the Sipapu where groundwater flows out and then ebbs down and then flows out again. And for the Hopi, this is the literal beating heart of the world. And water diversions upstream are, according to the Hopi elders, drying out the Sipapu and killing the heart of the world. And people look at him and say, well, you know, let's see your hydrological studies. And you know, if we were to see this from the Hopi perspective, we would be saying that's the thing that keeps the earth alive, and we are messing around with killing it. And if we were to adopt a Hopi perspective, we'd be thinking we have to protect that thing that is outside of us. It's a geological, hydrological feature, to think of it in Western terms, and yet in Hopi terms, it's us. It's more essential to us than any other thing we can think of. And if we began to treat the world with that kind of respect and reverence, it would upend everything that we do. And that's the kind of thing that indigenous traditional knowledge has to offer to us.
Yes, and it's so everything is elevated to such a kind of monstrous animation of the war on sacred. Another great friend of show is Sarah James, Gwich'in tribal elder, protecting the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and she says, please don't use the, you know, don't call it ANWR because that shortens it. Just say the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. If you make it alphabets, then people will drill it. And the Gwich'in call that place, you know, the place of all life being born. And we go, what is this perverse, you know, attack on the sacred and the earth and what's going down and then what's coming up? And here we are approaching the trippy inauguration. So how we're inaugurating a guiding story of sane reverence, just as you kind of described. So this kind of perverse, and, you know, as we said, you know, you and Terry Tempest Williams and I, as we were waiting to go on last week, right, and we were kind of backstage, and I did say, even though you both are so deeply dedicated and so inspiringly admirable in that way, even I, with, you know, with my little connection, when I got the news that Obama had declared it a monument, I burst into tears, because it's like, oh, something beautiful coming out of this cauldron of great difficulty. And you both said that you had felt that way in a far more earned way, really, but you both had that same feeling, right?
When I first got word that the monument was going to happen a few days before the actual proclamation, my immediate reaction was just to start crying.
Right, yeah. Even now, because we say, if we can just kind of lift the jackboot of dominance off of the jugular of nature, the incredible resilience to respond and come back. And, you know, you'd very kindly, again, backstage said, you know, and how is your friend, companion, Stella Coyote, doing, Stella, with her bad orthodox diagnosis from doctors about, you know, her shoulder being broken by tumor and, you know, time to wrap it up. And I go, well, Stella doesn't know about that. And Coyote is so resilient. And I'd said, you know, you said you'd hesitated to ask. And I go, no, she's life force, that Coyote resilience, life force. She's like, no, don't give me pharmaceutical painkillers. Give me medical cannabis. Yeah, that's all right. I'll go into the dream world and I'll eat a lot and I'll figure this out. You can see her figuring it out. And I just did want to do a little homage that I'd sent, because I'm writing always about Trickster and have a call with the Shift Network coming up, a free call for people who want to find out about that. CoyoteNetworkNews.com. You can jump in. It's the powerful magic that comes in dangerous times and the birth of Citizen Trickster or Bodhisattva Coyote. But I did feel, you know, before there were humans, you know, there was Trickster, the originating, liberating spark of creation that sets the whole thing going, ignition, lightning. And so for all of us aspiring agents of Trickster, you know, we can hurl lightning at the closed circle and liberate it into a spiral. And I see you, Bill Hedden, also in your magic backpack having lightning and, you know, all kinds of tricks and coyote things. And, you know, because Coyote is one of the inhabitants of Bear's Ears, right?
Coyote is definitely an inhabitant of Bear's Ears. And I'm now, just lately, I'm finding myself feeling a little less like a trickster and more like some kind of troll or something, just crunching forward. The thing that I blogged about yesterday seems to me to be a very clear example of how the newly ascendant forces in Washington plan to approach things. Everybody on the listening to this, I'm sure, heard about the midnight vote to you know, take away most of the powers of the House Ethics Office. But what they might not have heard is that in that 43 pages of technical rule changes, Utah's Congressman Rob Bishop, who was the chairman of the House Resources Committee, slipped in a provision that basically upends all the PAYGO rules, that Congress has to identify where the money's going to come from if they're going to do something that will affect the federal cash flow. And he basically, what he did was to put in a provision that says if the federal government gives away public land. So our national parks and monuments and wildlife refuges and wilderness, that is without cost as far as federal accounting goes. It's free. It has the public lands, Yellowstone and Gettysburg and the Statue of Liberty, are basically worthless. And giving them away doesn't cost the government anything, so they don't even have to figure out a revenue offset for basically liquidating their assets. And, they were chastened by the public outrage about the ethics office, and they'll probably study that for a while and then do it in another form. But the other 43 pages of that stuff is all still there, ready to be voted on in a few days. And declaring that these places are worthless, it seems to me, that's a pretty in-your-face way of laying down the gauntlet here and showing us what we're up against.
Yeah, no, it's true, and there's so much brewing now about how do we not adopt the tactics of the Dementors, but three drops of as organized as the Tea Party was, going, oh Lord, to stand up for what we love. And I don't know if you'd had a chance to peruse it, but there's some great stuff going on, again, of which you are a part of it, and all of your cohorts. Indivisible, Rachel Maddow did a segment on this too, but it's former congressional staffers who are going, here's how you organize, here's how you affect, with phone calls. Petitions don't mean anything, but phone calls to your members of Congress, and really only your members of Congress, calling on California, calling on Utah, calling on whatever. But it's again, okay, organizing. But yes, in your useful blog, yes, as you said, what the public did not know was the 43-page package of technical seeming rule changes was filled with all kinds of nefarious things. And you are too much a part of the land, really, probably, to watch television, but I do want to bring in the best TV show of last year, which was Braindead, and it did educate people because in a wonderful, satirical, liberating way, with Tony Shalhoub as the evil right-wing senator, and Braindead, brain insects from outer space are taking over politicians' brains, and a symptom of that is that they thrive on conflict, and they're organizational nefariousness is increased. So in certain bills that look, they've stashed, the Syrian imprisonment camps, and you have to file through all this stuff, and the same week that show came out, the Democrats had to vote against Zika funding because the Republicans had stashed, destroy Planned Parenthood, in paragraph 80, right? So anyway, so yes, as you say, so we've all got to be creatively suspicious, look through all this stuff, go, no, wait a minute here. And to go on to the article in the Washington Post on Wednesday, just yesterday, I guess, House GOP changes federal land rule. Move will make it easier for Congress to cede areas to states. And the senior government relations director for the Wilderness Society said, right out of the gate, congressional Republicans are declaring open season on federal land. So it's true that the alleged president-elect, the president cannot overturn monument status, right? But Congress,
that's correct.
But Congress can?
Yes, they could always pass a law that would, they could undo any of our national parks or any of our wilderness areas or any of our national monuments. They're giving signs that they don't want to endure the political heat from doing that, or they're skeptical that they could round up the votes. So the Utah Republicans right now are asking President Trump to undo the bear's ears, and actually they're asking him to go back 20 years and undo the Grand Staircase National Monument in Utah. And that will land the Trump administration in court for a long time, and all the precedents look like they will lose that. So it's interesting that the politicians in the House and the Senate, who could unquestionably repeal it through legislation seem not to want to try to go that way.
Which means what?
I think they know how unpopular it would be. I mean, in their echo chamber, they say every time no one in Utah supports this, despite the fact that the polls show that about 70% of Utahns are thrilled that Bears Ears was designated. And they say that the tribes are all opposed to it when all the tribes have adopted resolutions supporting it in the last few weeks. And then they'll say that none of the Utah Navajo support it when 6 of the 7 Utah Navajo chapters have passed resolutions supporting the Bears Ears. The people who oppose it are the Utah congressional delegates who get all their funding from oil and gas companies.
Right. Yeah, and then there's a Mormon theme, right, of the Mormons trying to grab land as well. And
a really stunning thing happened this summer when Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell came out to hold a hearing about Bears Ears right down in Bluff, Utah, in the Bears Ears region, and one of the local county commissioners stood up, and he's Mormon. His family was part of the Mormon Hole in the Rock expedition that went through incredible hardship to cross the gorge of the Colorado River. They needed better guides, but they ended up at this incredible canyon and had to lower their wagons and their horses and everything down one side of the canyon and then haul them up the other side. It's, you know, quite a remarkable thing. And then they came into southern Utah around Bluff along the San Juan River. But when this county commissioner told the story, he said, "And my ancestors came here and were the first people to settle in the San Juan country." He was in a room filled with Native Americans whose ancestors had been there for 13,000 years. And he said that his forebears were the first people who lived in that country. And he, even though there were a group of Navajo supporters there for his position, he got a unified gasp from the whole audience.
There is all of this complexity, but again, you know, just to the 70% of Utah, everything sane, reverent common sense, and also the indivisible kind of program for contacting your Congress is highly effective, highly organized, and I do love, you're not a troll. We want to send Coyote to lighten your heart, oh wonderful dedicated Bill Hedden, because I see a giant coyote standing behind you right now. So I like, you know, in this quirky, you know, mix of, you know, ancient meeting modern and news meeting myth, the quality of confusion, or what's called Mercury retrograde, we go, well, where should we direct that? You know, may confusion go to the Dementor camp. There you go. Who's a good confusion? Yes, you are over there to disrupt and confuse and all of that. And the power of the story, right, which is, you know, it's very impressive. And it's not getting enough press that 70% of Utah are delighted at this designation. So putting the story out more, and all of the citizen tricksters listening to this show are up for that. How would you guide us to protect the beauty that you've been protecting for so long? What would you like us all citizen trickster aspirants to do?
Well, I think that you talked, you know, earlier about the model that people calling their representatives and taking that page out of the Tea Party playbook is very true. I mean, we saw what happened when so many people were outraged about gutting the ethics office as a first move. And I think that there can be a very strong partnership with all of us, with the people, you know, who are the experts about healthcare, or the people who are the experts about environmental justice and the environmentalists. We're going to need to rely on one another to be guides to the issues and the time ahead, and then we're going to have to, you know, create networks of communication where somebody can say, you know what, this thing that is happening right now is really important. This is a big deal, and we need as many people as possible to be reaching out. And
hold that thought, because we're going to take a very, very short break, and we'll be right back. But hold exactly that thought. We're hosting wonderful Bill Hedden, Executive Director of the Grand Canyon Trust, and we'll be right back after this very short inspirational break. Here we go.
She shook the constellation and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellation and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasar and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Ah, get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Today, this is KPFA 94.1 FM, and today we are hosting Bill Hedden, Executive Director of the Grand Canyon Trust, the wild lands of our collective soul. And GrandCanyonTrust.org is a splendid place to go for latest blogs and updates on how we can protect the sacred and all of that. So, Bill Hedden, you were right in the middle of, yes, how do we celebrate and protect what we love, in this case, the bear's ears, which has been declared a national monument by Obama, something deep in the dedicated hearts of you and so many of your team working on this for a long, long time, and under threat. So to celebrate and protect, because they kind of go together, right?
Yeah, I was reading yesterday that the 48 Democratic senators received a collective 78 million votes in the election, and the 52 Republican senators got a collective 54 million votes. And so I think that we shouldn't feel shy about, having the public voice. And we're going to have to be much more active about it than we ever were in the past, where we've been relying on NGOs and our politicians to carry water for us. I think we're all going to need to band together in networks where we can get really good information about what kinds of things are going on with the government, and then make that collective will known to these guys, and never let them forget that the numbers of people were against them at, you know, almost every level of the election.
Yeah, that's really crucial, and I'd be happy to post on website coyotenetworknews.com, or you can email info@coyotenetworknews.com for the PDF file put together by as Indivisible, which is so useful. Just a little bit, he says, here's the quick and dirty summary. How grassroots advocacy worked to stop President Obama. We examine lessons from the Tea Party's rise and recommend two key strategic components, a local strategy, some better words, we can word craft it, not targeting exactly, but individual members of Congress, and how your member of Congress thinks, re-election, and how to use that to save democracy. And then it's got very detailed organizational craft, and again, this is where, Coyote doesn't love rules, but loves organization on behalf of everything, and I go, right. And it seems, how the Tea Party, a tiny minority, really, blocked and disrespected, everything that Obama wanted to do. And again, we don't want to become like them, but we know, boy, like brain dead, they were really organized, and they are really organized right now. Again, as the newspaper article in the Post said, right out of the gate, congressional Republicans are declaring declaring open season on federal lands. We go, ha. Huh. So, yeah, so organizational woofing. And then, well, you know, your long journey when you moved to Utah and so loved it, I am so inspired by you, because when things were under threat, you ran for commissioner, right? I mean, you stepped right in.
Yeah, I'd come here and, you know, I thought I was having my desert idol in the middle of nowhere, and about 2 years later, the U.S. Department of Energy showed up wanting to put the nation's high-level nuclear waste dump right at the entrance to Canyonlands National Park, and so I quickly got pulled into politics and continued to do that just as a, you know, as a citizen until I'd been here a while and had enough credibility and standing, I guess, to be elected to the local county government here. And you know, in these parts of the country, a county may be 3 or 4 million acres, so bigger than some of the states in other parts of the country. And the county commissioners, who may be elected by 1,000 people total, are treated as the last word on what should happen with all those lands that belong to all Americans. And so I thought, well, looking at county commissions, it sure looks like amateur night to me. So I might as well try to get involved. And it's a really interesting experience to do that. And it is remarkable how much power is in the hands of people who have no training and in many cases no aptitude for doing that.
Right. No. But I think this is so important. The micro seeds of your dedication teased into inspiring pertinence to us all. You know, we are all called to partner with what we love to protect it now. And this whole realm of, you know, politics, it's like, you know, as Coyote likes to do, you know, let's excavate everything backwards to its originating, liberating spark before it got bamboozled, before it got orthodox, before it got, you know, all that. You know, what did this want to be? And that includes politics. You know, if we track it all the way back, it really is, as you embody, you know, a dedication to collective good. That's what it wants to be, you know. And I think now, you know, for everybody, because so many of the polarity going, I'm spiritual, I don't do the news, or I'm political, I don't do spirit. It's like, no, it's the wedding. Those, as you say, those who've lived with reciprocal blessing and relating on the land, you know, as our guides, which certainly, you know, includes yourself and your beautiful family. So it is, you know, so that there are multi layers here of your dedicated heart and competent political action, and then your sense of kinship with the land, and, you know, and also Bear's Ears is very compelling. Who was it? One of our wonderful team also, who was talking about Bear's Ears are alert and listening, and just sort of bringing it alive, because it does look like Bear's Ears, and Bear's Ears are perked right up right now, right?
They certainly are. There's going to be a big celebration down there, you know, to have a sense on the night of the designation that the tribes were on the bank of the San Juan River praying for the protection of the monument.
Mm.
And on Saturday, on the 7th, there's going to be another celebration in the Bear's Ears. This is something that, just like Standing Rock, indigenous people far and wide have been watching and praying for. And so it's really a significant thing. And now making it stand up, that the Utah Attorney General has vowed to file litigation to overturn it. We are preparing to intervene in that and think there's good precedent that they will fail with that litigation, but they're asking President Trump to undo it, and they're vowing to cut off all funding. So we're going to have to defend it in many, many ways.
Right.
But I think, you know, that's, these people aren't surprised that it's going to be a hard fight. They feel like they've been waiting hundreds of years for this, and now we're going to have to fight for it anew. But it's a massive step that the president did this.
Yes. Yeah. No. That is true. And also, just to clarify, somebody else or one of our teammates had written on Grand Canyon Trust about why the president can't overturn it. Is that not true?
The authority is given to the president to designate the monuments, but it says nothing about authority to undesignate a monument, and it's never happened. Legal experts generally agree that it would be, you know, unlikely that would be found to be legal. We may well find out, but I suspect that this isn't a particular fight that President Trump is going to want to take on right away, but, you know, who can say anything about what he might do or not do?
Right, yes, exactly. We don't know. We don't presume. In the kinship of, all right. So here's the horrific thing, kind of rising into visible animation of, you know, this millennia of war on reverence, and just to kind of reach back to also a recent wonderful guest, scholar and embodied being, Max Dashu, who tracks back, you know, before again we go back to the originating spark and then the war on reverence. She said, you know, the weavers, the three weaving women, and I love that the word text means to weave and texture. And so when we're texting, we're weaving creation. Every secular activity actually can be imbued with a sacred sense. But she said the weaving women, you know, reverence, that it used to be that women, when weaving, would enchant, to sing blessings into the fabric, and the Orthodox Christians came along and were like, no singing, no. And we noticed that some of you sit by water in a reverie. No, none of that. It's like, really, they outlawed sitting in reverie by water. I mean, that's so strong is the orthodoxy of which we're seeing this kind of bloom. And I did just learn, you know, that ortho means straight, like orthodontistry is straight teeth, so orthodox is straight teaching. And we go, no, we like curvy teaching and curvy strategy. I guess like the San Juan River is pretty curvy. Rivers in general are curvy. And, you know, and in feng shui it says, you know, you don't want a straight path to your house because demons always walk in straight lines. And if it's curvy, they're so silly they can't find their way. So I like that spirals and curves, you know, and, you know, that all natural facts be social strategy metaphors. And I mean, I know this is your whole life, pardon my flat-footedness, or my coyote paw. You know, what in the land do you love that you think of as a quality of its intelligence, of this beautiful, beautiful, powerful, mysterious place, you know, southeastern Utah?
Well, I think that what is really unusual here is that this is a place that has some of the most enchanting walks that you can encounter anywhere in the world. Canyons that are, you know, made of pink rock and that have arches and alcoves and towers and that, you know, change around every bend. And then you come upon fantastic artwork that's been there on the walls of the canyon for 800 or 8,000 years. And you talked about spirals. Spirals are a very common motif in that art. And so that, you know, you can be walking up a canyon and suddenly, you know, startle a mule deer that goes running off through this glorious place and sit in a creek with a pool that, you know, is a waterfall dropping down, forming a bathtub with canyon walls going up hundreds of feet all around you. And it's just purely a magic place where you also have the presence of this long history of people being there and relating to it probably in that same kind of immediate way. And, you know, whether you're looking at the intimacy of a alcove garden with, you know, with ferns and daisies in a dripping spring, or whether you're looking out over a gigantic vista with 2,000 foot cliffs and huge landforms, you know, it's gorgeous at every level. It's kind of that whole fractal thing.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful and most enchanting. No, it's true. My two visits there. Yeah, you look up canyons and you go, ooh, you could spend your life going up there. Oh, and there's another one, and and the mystery. I remember having the great luck to connect with Bluff residents in Bluff, Utah, and wonderful local guide Joe Paycheck, who took wonderful Jennifer Stoll and me up to see, you know, cave art and the shaman who's really the Ye'e, the divine being carved there. And and I asked him about this quirky thing, because we'd gone on a wonderful walk the day before to see cave art and with a wonderful local person. And whenever we came to the little piles of stones to mark the way, she kicked them over. I'm like, really? And she's like, yes, people are just trying to fend off mystery. And I go, okay, you know, just even the couple with the golden retriever, can they find their way back? She's like, yeah, they might have an adventure. But they, and I asked Joe about this, and I go, you know, kicking over the stones. And he goes, well, yeah, it is an interesting issue about fending off mystery. And he said some of the Mormon groups that he'd led, the closer they get to some sacred site that's clearly kind of going wong, 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 the louder they would sing just to kind of fend off mystery, going, no, no. And, as you animate this beloved place, land, so important to all of us, whether we are lucky enough to visit or to live there or not, the fact that it exists, I mean, it is a place that feeds mystery and awe and wonder, as you said, right? So it's essential to who we are as a species, right?
I think it does that as well as anywhere.
Yeah.
I know of, and I spend a lot of time in the wildest places I can find, and you know, the only thing that's comparable to what you find there is where you have grizzly bears or wolves around, something that could eat you, and you're similarly put into another place, and that's what this kind of country can do in a, I don't know, for me, it's a gentler way. I know a lot of people think of it as really harsh, demanding country, and it is. You can get yourself in a lot of trouble, but it's also so lovely and benign in a lot of ways. It's for me, it's magic.
Yeah, and it is essential to who we are as a being, and part of you know, as we're convening now, the moon and in Aries, which is fierce protection of life, is rising with Uranus, the trickster coyote, rising with the dwarf planet Ceres, Demeter, goddess of the earth, and we go, right, this alliance with coyote, trickster, ingenuity for fierce protection, partnering with Big Mama Earth. And I so love the likes of yourself and what's going on at Standing Rock is people, you know, overcoming their inhibition, shame, you know, about to boldly say, you know, water is sacred. Certain places are sacred. We are standing up for Mother Earth. And it's something that even kind of left-wingers have been shy of saying, going, oh, we've got to be... And it's like, no, mystery, this, absolutely. And in that sense, you know, it is the indigenous mind within us all that's guiding us to cast off the, you know, the conditioned shame of what we should be most proud of, to be partnered and kinned. So you're feeling, are you feeling plucky enough? Can we wish you any pluck or?
Oh, we could use all the pluck we can get, but we are feeling plucky. And I just had a thought that I hadn't really had before about why it's prevalent among people who who live in around Bluff too want to knock down the cairns that people make to mark trails going up to beautiful rock art sites or mm-hmm. or structures, and it's that sense of sacredness.
Mm-hmm.
The you know, to gather a bunch of rocks to make a cairn, you have to go wandering all around, trampling over the you know, cryptobiotic soil and damaging the biological system in that way. But you also are, you know, pulling up rocks that might have a scorpion living under it or a lizard or, you know, it's, you're defacing the place. It's like if you wanted to build a cairn in the city, you know, grabbing the trim off somebody's window. And so in a sense, not only is it a way for people who aren't paying attention and have no interest in having, you know, the awareness and searching out the mystery of finding these rock art places and the structures, but it's you know, I just want to get on my cell phone and be told how to get there, and then somebody has piled up cairns at some cost to the immediate environment, and it's kind of a desecration. And so
they
do almost all knock down the cairns whenever they find them.
Right. We do love changing our mind because I watched that and I was like, huh, I don't know. I don't know what I think about that. And that's why, you know, asking Joe and yourself going, oh, yeah, all right, kick them over. You know, it's an intriguing, again, the boundaries and the protection of the sacred and the guiding of our unruly human selves back into sacred accord. San Ignacio Lagoon is a precious place in Baja, the only place really on Earth where the gray whales seek very extremely close intimate contact with humans, like 2 inches from your face, and they bring their baby whales up, and it's very profound. And I was saying to Pancho Mayoral, who has been a fisherman steward of that place since the whales made contact with his dad on the day that the UN passed the Marine Mammal Protection Act. That's when the whales made their first contact with humans, and it's all connected. But I said, well, how are you feeling about, you know, the roads are getting better, right? And he did say, we have a saying, bad roads, good people, good roads, bad people. And so it's an interesting dynamic, right? And I suppose that's to come back to the bear's ears planning and the vision that we all want to animate of the five tribes, the Hopi, Zuni, the Navajos, the two Utes, Ute tribes, being able to have those respectful boundaries, you know, the equivalent of bad roads, meaning, and the kicking over the cairns going, no, here's how you come through. This is an attitude of respect. So, do you have concern about bad roads, good people, good roads, bad people?
I certainly do, and that's a, you know, that's a very common refrain locally in these places, is people have watched as the world became more crowded and people had more information about the interesting things to go to, and instead of just realizing that, you know, we all do those things and we travel a lot and we see a lot of places, they, you know, have decided to blame the fact that there were more tourists around on environmentalists and on designations of places. And I guess there could be some truth in that, but at this point when, you know, you can look up Moon House and find directions for how to get there, and, you know, it's the fact that it's now Bears Ears National Monument does not really make it more vulnerable. And the idea that I think it's going to be important for the tribes here, just as the Lakota have been doing at Standing Rock, to say, okay, you're here.
Mm-hmm.
This is how you should be approaching this place. And this is,
right.
You know, I think that's going to be one of the things that the tribes may really have to reveal to us.
Yes. Right. Well, and I was thinking that that's also the beauty of the proposed educational center, wedding indigenous guiding with Western science in a happy collaboration, would be the slow down, enter into this realm. Here's guidelines, and to feed to feed one's own sense of wonder and mystery and the larger guiding design. So and you yourself, I mean, so the big celebration on Saturday, January 7th, when will that be, just so we can telepathically cahoot with that in Bluff?
It's going to be in the afternoon in Bluff. I am embarrassed to say I don't know the exact timing of it.
We'll just tap in. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yes, and because Bluff and Bluff is such a great and quirky and intriguing place. Again, it attracts. I think so many of us. You were drawn to this land so long ago, and when you encounter people who've been in Bluff for quite a long time, it's a small population, right? But people they go, we were just in. And then this was it, right here. And pretty much also, I got to land in Bluff and go to a wedding and meet many people. But pretty much everybody was involved in protecting land and protecting what they loved and engaged in, intimate cahooting. So it's very magnetic that way. And I know they had their big New Year's there. Oh, you were there, right?
My daughter was there with Terry Tempest Williams and Brooke, and watched the burning of the herons that they had this year.
Yeah, Joe Paycheck was part of the creators of that. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, very good. So it is, so we have these micro examples, and Bluff and your own dedicated heart and of people living in celebratory intimacy with their place, right? Mm-hmm. And that has great power, and we do want to amplify your pluck and your dedication, and spiral it back to you with big whoops of yip yip coyote resilience and gratitude for the work that you and your team and your colleagues and so many people have been doing to bring this about. And we want it to root in, and again, all power and blessing. So we're on our way out, but is there anything you would wish or like or want to spiral out in this last minute here?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
Last year, during the course of the year, we and you were part of the third of these gatherings, we gathered people together to talk about the celebration, really, of our public lands and what they mean to us and all the people whose stories are part of the public lands. And in the month to come, on the Grand Canyon Trust website, we're going to put up about 100 short videos that are compiled from the interviews with all of the participants.
Wonderful.
Including you, Caroline.
Okay, that's great.
And if people, oops, toward the end of January would check the Grand Canyon Trust website and look for the Public Lands Gatherings page.
We will do that. We're on our way out now, but I hope to be honored enough to be in perpetual cahoots with you and all that you hold dear. Wonderful, Bill Haddon. Thank you.
Thank you, Caroline.
That's great. Thanks to Alex Drewinskis in Washington, D.C., Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you again, Bill. GrandCanyonTrust.org.
Be sure to catch Apex Express on KPFA. Apex Express is a weekly program following news and cultural events throughout Asia and the Pacific Islands. Find out about issues affecting Asian American and Pacific Islander communities locally and globally. Get on board the Apex Express Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. on KPFA.
For over two decades, the KPFA First Voice Apprenticeship Program has invited women and people of color to become radio producers. It's one of the only programs in the country that broadcasts the voices of people who are traditionally denied the radio waves. As an apprentice, you will be trained to write, edit, and produce radio that speaks your truth. Your voice will be the instrument of change that you want in the world. For more information on how to apply, call 510-848-6767 extension 235, or email us at apprenticeship@kpfa.org.
The application deadline is Friday, January 27th at 5 p.m.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFC.